Welcome to Series 7 of the Lawyers Coach podcast. My name is Oliver Hansard, and each episode of this podcast will feature myself and Claire Rayson, both of us coaches and former lawyers, trying to find out what makes lawyers tick. In this series, we will be hearing from various guests and experts talking about the billable hour. And then, at the end of each episode, we will both be reflecting on what we heard. The Lawyers Coach podcast is brought to you by Client Talk and Hansard Coaching. In this episode, Claire Rayson talks to Adam Morley, founding partner at Brandsmiths. Claire and Adam explore a range of issues around billing clients and, in particular, the need to be aligned with client motivations. Claire starts by asking Adam what got him into the law in the first place.
I got into law, probably I was 18 years old. I did maths and physics and further maths, and I'd never really even written an essay. But the thing that actually got me into law was watching the TV show LA Law. That's what got me into it. And then I had a training contract interview, and I actually said that and didn't get the training contract.
That's mad. It's quite interesting because we've had, you know, as I said, we ask all of our guests, and the other one that always comes up is Ally McBeal. So, yeah.
It's a certain age. It's a certain age of person that will have watched LA Law and Ally McBeal. But yeah, it was for me that, yeah.
And I had to look at your background before we spoke, and I noticed that you took a fairly traditional route in the sense of you went into City Firm, you progressed on to partnership, and then you kind of jumped ship and have done other things. Can you tell us a little bit about that journey?
Sure. So I started at City Firm, as you say, stayed there till I was about 3 years qualified. It was very traditional, very different to how things are now. You had to wear a suit every day. You had to work 5 days a week in the office. You had to call all the partners by Mr. or Mrs. or Miss. Always surnames, and every day the partners had lunch from 1 o'clock onwards. And I thought, this looks great. You know, maybe one day I can be a partner and I can have lunch every day from 1 o'clock onwards. But it was very different. You could, if you got a letter in, I remember my supervising partner getting a letter in and diarizing to respond to it in 14 days. And now you get a letter in, you've got to be acting on it immediately. So the pace has really moved on. I went to Mishcons, I was there for 10 years, great firm, made partner there and went up the ladder. And yeah, I got to a point when I'd been a partner for kind of 6 or 7 years where I thought I'd like to go out on my own, and I set up Brandsmiths.
Was it a decision that took you a long time to make, or was it one that you kind of just woke up and you just knew that that was what you wanted to do?
I think that I had been interested in starting other businesses outside of law. So I had a passion for starting businesses, been around them. I was really excited about them. But yeah, it was a hard thing to do. Mishcons, you can imagine, big firm. I was a partner on good money. And you leave and you have to effectively invest everything you have and hope it works. And you're never going to earn the money you were earning there in the first few years. It's that you've got to play very medium to long term. Yeah, it was a little bit scary. But once I thought about it, I couldn't get it out of my head.
And tell us a little bit about Brandsmiths, which is one of the companies that you run, that you founded.
Yeah. So founded it 8.5 years ago now. We have about 40 lawyers working for us, probably about 50 something employees. Yeah, we've grown a lot since the pandemic, actually. The first 6 years, our turnover was not exactly the same, but very similar. And then since 2020, we've tripled our revenues. And yeah, it's fast growth now. I try and do as little lawyering as possible and try and be a CEO now and run the business. And as I was explaining to someone the other day, it's a job for which I have no training. So I've got a lot of training to be a lawyer, but I've had no training to be a CEO. So it's a tough job.
And you mentioned there that the pandemic was a bit of a tipping point for the good for Brandsmiths. Was it something about the pandemic that kind of tipped the balance, or was it just coincidental that that was when?
I think when it, a little bit of coincidence, but I think people went back to their houses, and it was all about time recording because people couldn't be in the office. So people had to really look at how they were time recording and show their value, right? If you can't be with people, you've got to show your value. as compared to other firms, we were smaller, we were more nimble, we could make changes more quickly, we could focus on efficiencies, we didn't have tons of property. Yeah, I don't know precisely why it was good for us, but it was good for us actually coming out of that. Maybe a coincidence, I'm not sure.
And you mentioned time recording there, and the theme for the series is kind of the billable hour and time recording, and you know, the things that that drives for good and for bad. I'm sensing that you do things slightly differently at Brandsmiths, and that's something that has been attractive. I don't want to put words into your mouth, but could you tell us a little bit about how you approach it at Brandsmiths?
Yeah, so when we started off, we had no chargeable hours targets at all when we were smaller. You know, that had positive and negative effects. I think that there's two aspects to this. It's how you charge clients, and the mechanism you use to charge clients. And then there's how you set KPIs, performance manage your staff. And they are two different things, but I think with time recording, they're used by many firms to do both things. I definitely think it's a KPI. It's an interesting KPI. I don't think it's the be all and end all. I don't think it's everything. We do have soft targets here, much lower probably than many other firms, but we use it because if the firm's busy and you're busy, but your productivity is low, we'll ask why, and it allow us to work out why. If you weren't charging time, you wouldn't be able to figure that out. Now, how that translates through and what you do with a client is a totally different issue for the firm. And we have a variety of different arrangements we'll work with clients on. But I think internally, it's a good KPI, actually. It's a really good KPI.
I agree that there are kind of two sides to this, and it'd be interesting to explore both with you. And I will start with where you finished off there, talking about KPIs and using it as a metric internally. You said that you, for you, it's a good thing. So it'd be interesting, again, just to find out what you mean by that and whether you have used some of your learning from perhaps that more traditional environment in the bigger city firms, and you've kind of taken anything positive from that and have used it in your new environment?
At Brandsmiths, I think it's important that people are in the office, first and foremost. So we have a minimum of people being in the office 3 days, lawyers, because I think you need that in order for senior people to train junior people. I think it's very difficult to do that remotely. Because we're in the office a lot, you can have an idea of how busy people are as a productivity measure. I mean, there's the difference between being busy and being productive. And what as still a relatively small business, people in the firm understand, I hope, how the firm works, which is the firm charges money in respect of the work done by its people. But those charges are then turned into bills, and those bills then turn into money. If that cycle doesn't happen, the firm doesn't exist anymore. It's absolutely fundamental. I think as a lawyer, you can get carried away with the case, the law, setting precedents, all those things. And I see that as not a luxury, but as something that is done once you have a firm on a very firm footing. But I think it's important for all the lawyers to understand how a law firm works and survives and continues to trade. And that's by finding a way to change the time that people are spending on matters into bills. That can be done in a whole different sort of ways. You can do it on damages-based arrangements, CFAs, set fees, whatever it may be. But I think it's very important for the lawyers and everyone in the firm to understand the amount of time you spent on something, the quality of time you spend on it as well, which is a slightly different thing, is very important.
Interesting that you entered there, because I was going to pick up on that quality point, because I think one of the criticisms that's levied at the billable hour is that it doesn't reward efficiency. It doesn't, you know, focus perhaps the minds of lawyers to send a short email that answers the client's question. It kind of pushes them down the path of sending something longer that, you know, perhaps takes a longer time to produce. So how do you balance that off in terms of, if it is a measure that you're looking at, how do your lawyers know that it is about the quality rather than the time that's spent on something?
As a starting point, as a means of charging clients, it's a very blunt instrument, and it for sure can lead to bad behavior. If someone comes around your house and says they'll clean your windows, and if it's an hour, it's 10 quid, and if it's 2 hours, it's 20 quid, then they're incentivized to spend 2 hours. to do the work that would have taken 1 hour. Now, as a litigator, we have pretty strict cost budgeting now around different stages of litigation, and it's almost getting to the stage where you're looking to almost fix fees for that. Now, that's those cost budgets are inter partes, but with your own client, if the judge has said only 50,000 is reasonable, it might be quite difficult to justify 100,000 to your client. So I think it's a very blunt instrument, and really what you want to do, like in any job, finding out how much it's costing you is not really the way around it. The way you should price the job is finding out what the value is to the client and charging in line with the value. So I think corporate lawyers can do this, but they say it's 1% or 2% of the corporate transaction. Some high-end property lawyers do it as well. But it's a very, very challenging exercise. So we've reverted in law to the billable hour because it's been there for ages. But eventually, I think it probably will go. Clients want you to be aligned with them, so you're aligned on objectives. So if I'm running a piece of litigation and I'm a law firm and my interest is in how much I'm charging, I can spend five times longer than I should do, make lots of money and lose, and I'm not affected. Whereas a client wants me to spend less time and win. So the thing with DBAs is you're incentivized to spend less time and win. I mean, the thing set against that, which some traditional people may say to you, is you don't want the lawyers being in on the reward and the prize because it compromises their independence. And ultimately, as a solicitor, you are part of the court. You're a solicitor of the senior court, Supreme Court, and you have standards to uphold. So are you in a conflict when you may or may not have to do something, but you're in on the outcome? Again, that's another thing that moves you towards the billable hour and away from being part of the reward.
You mentioned there that, you know, some traditionalists would, you know, an argument that they would put forward is the one that you've just espoused. Is it an argument that you buy into, or can you see that there is a way around that?
Look, as a lawyer, I take my obligations to the court very seriously, and I think pretty much all lawyers do. I don't think by being in on the prize, it's going to make us not comply with our rules. When you make a lawyer, when you reward him or her or the firm by reference to success in the case, I think it's a positive thing. I think too many lawyers are too unconcerned with success in the case, which is ultimately the client's objective, which is ultimately the product or service they're buying. And they're more concerned with just doing the case. And if they lose, never mind. I mean, I think you find when you're a junior lawyer and you lose a case, most junior lawyers, really hurts because you're really close to the client. And then you see the senior guys and they lose a case and they've been there before and done it. And, you know, like anyone with experience, they can take it more in their stride. I think what's hard to take sometimes as a solicitor, I think many solicitors may feel this, you work with some barristers, by no means all, just a few, you can tell sometimes they're not motivated by winning or losing. They're getting their brief fee. They're getting their refreshers. They win or they lose, they don't care. And I don't think that's good for the profession.
You mentioned that you are spending less time lawyering and more time as a CEO. So I was just wondering how you motivate your staff to, or the lawyers that work for you, to really be focused on the outcome and the value that they're providing to their client.
A lot of our litigation clients are corporates that are serial litigators. And so we have KPIs with them as to how many cases we settle, how quickly we do it, how much money we recover. And that really aligns very well the firm and the client, because we all want to settle things quickly. It's one way to make the lawyer spend less time is to get them aligned, settle the case, get another case in, and you can earn more. So that's a good way. So the answer to your question is it's clear on some cases that interests should be aligned. On other cases, I think everyone in the firm knows how important client satisfaction is, both to the retention of clients and bringing in new clients. And people can be incentivized financially when working for big clients on client retention.
I want to pick up the two strands maybe in one question, because we've mentioned that there are kind of two sides to this, the client side and then also the internal side. And one of the things that the billable hour does provide is an easy metric to measure. And you mentioned there that, you know, you do look at soft skills and they are obviously harder to measure. And client satisfaction is, again, another measure, which is perhaps a bit more tricky to be able to get a, you know, a reading of. So on both sides, what do you do to make sure that you're measuring client satisfaction, but also internally you're measuring behaviours that lead to that client satisfaction?
One way you can measure those behaviours is to look at people's recovery rates. So you can look at, so being traditional, you can have your billable hours, you can see how much time someone's charged, and then you can see how it's come out in the wash into bills and payments. And if someone's recording 100 hours, but we're only billing 20 and we're only recovering 10, that's a pretty good way of working out maybe they're not delivering great value. The other way you can look at it, and this is something lawyers don't really do, but they do much more in the United States, and I'm not saying we do it, but another way you could do it is to look at people's win ratios. And thirdly, if you're measuring soft skills, client retention, the way people deal with it, proofs in the pudding sometimes of how many clients someone's got, what their originations are like, what their matter part of the billings are like. You know, people with great skills like that, those numbers will be high.
And do you think, I mean, you've got this lovely perspective of having been in Michigan, a fantastic firm, and now you've set up your own firm. Mm-hmm. Do you think that clients now are more open to going with some alternative brands rather than following the, you know, kind of going to the magic circle because they know it's safe?
I think when you look at brands of law firms, the magic circle brands always put in work. They're a mark of quality because the people that work there and the work they produce is high quality. And also they're a reassurance for certain people. You know, no one got fired for using Clifford Chance, etc. I think outside of the magic circle, I think it's more and more tough for medium-sized firms without a particular offering. I think that becomes challenging. I think business is as tough as it's ever been. Competition is as tough as it's ever been. People have so much access to information now. And if you have a particular dispute, if you have an employment dispute, you want to go online and find the best employment lawyer. You know, you see how it's worked in the travel industry. Back in the day, people would go to travel agents, take their recommendations. Now, people are straight on TripAdvisor and they want to see for themselves exactly what the rating is. And they won't go there and it's got a good rating. I think, talking from a brand's perspective, we're looking to be the leading IP boutique in the UK. We want everyone to use us for their IP needs. And I think we can make that happen. I think we can build a brand in that area. But it's challenging. It's challenging for sure to build that brand. It's taken Slaughters, Clifford Chance, Allen Overy, you know, years and years and years. But once you've got it really does bring in custom to your firm.
And you mentioned their focus, and clearly you have that focus in terms of the work that you want to do at Brandsmith. And for some of our listeners who are perhaps thinking about going on their own, creating a separate offering, what advice would you give as a business owner, as a CEO, to someone listening who's thinking about going and doing what you've done?
It's much easier now than it was 8 years ago to start. The barriers to starting and getting your law firm up and running quickly, you know, having the right accounting software, having the right, all the things you need. You can start off by joining one of these Keystone Legal kind of firms as a platform and take your clients with you, service them there. So I think the first question you should ask yourself is, do I want to create something significantly bigger than myself? Or am I just really happy with my practice of, let's say you've got £1 million practice and you work at a big firm, you might get paid £300,000-£400,000. And you might think, actually, I don't want to create something bigger than myself. I just want to take 700,000 of that million. I like my clients. They get on with me. We love them. We love each other. Then probably the right thing for you to do is not set up your own firm. It's to join someone like Keystone Law or Gallagher Cook or one of those firms. I think you should set up your own firm if you want to create something bigger than yourself and you're doing something slightly different to the market. So you've got your existing book of clients. That's fine. You know, you take your existing book of clients anywhere. I'd set up on your own if you think you're going to do something different in the market and something that's going to appeal to people who aren't your existing clients after you have them. That's what you should be thinking of. And if you can, it's incredible. It's amazing. Make your own decisions, keep your point of view in mind, and you can really make a difference.
And what do you wish you had known when you started off 8 years ago that you now know?
I wish I'd known or read some books or had a bit more education on how to grow a business from zero upwards. I wish I'd known that you get different pain points along the way and you have to really change and move through them. But yeah, I wish I'd had some kind of business lessons.
And do you think it's interesting on the kind of the business lessons point? Because I mean, you mentioned that you had you were a partner before you moved on, and you know, as a partner, you are certainly equity partners, part owners in the businesses that they are partners of. Do you think that firms need to get better at kind of teaching those business skills earlier, and you know, making sure that partners have a bit more knowledge on what it means to run a business?
Depends what the firm's trying to achieve. If the firm wants to keep the person there, then probably not. They don't need to give them lessons on how to go off on their own. But, you know, if you are trying to create a set of people who can leave and can set up their own businesses, yeah. If you're in the SLT at a firm, a big firm, then yeah, you're running a business. You're running a business and you'll understand what HR does, what finance does, what marketing does, business development, all that stuff. But if you're not, if you're a regular equity partner, then you'll focus on your business and your practice, which is relationships with your employees and your clients and delivering, which is pretty simple, really.
What's next for you? What does the future hold for you as Adam and you at Brandsmiths?
The thing about growth is when you get going on growth, you've got to continue it. I think you can start off and say, I don't want my business to be more than £1 million. Turnover, I'm going to turn away work, and you prioritize yourself and say, this is what I want in my life. I don't want to do this. If you're not doing that, if you're going for growth, which we are, you have to keep growing, because otherwise it doesn't work, because your trainees need to turn into qualifieds and senior associates and partners, and that can't happen if what's underneath them is coming. So we're going to continue to grow. We have been over the years approached by other firms. It's never been quite right for us, because I've always wanted us to remain independent in that way. There's interesting ways it's changed now for law firms. There's external money that can come into law firms. Some law firms even float. For me, it's about growing the firm in the right way, making us the top IP boutique in the UK, and doing it whilst ensuring that our values remain.
Adam, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. It's been fascinating finding out about your journey, and I wish you every success in the future.
Thank you, Claire.
That was Claire talking to Adam Morley, founding partner at Brandsmiths. Claire, I was fascinated by the part when Adam was talking about recovery and retention rates being good proxies for value delivered to clients.
Yeah, and I think, you know, recovery rates is interesting, because I think lots of firms do look at that as a metric. And I also think that, you know, retention is another metric that firms look at. Adam mentioned there, a good indicator that clients are happy and you're providing them with value. I think that, you know, there are also obviously other ways that you can do that. And for me, there's no substitute to going and asking your clients how you're doing and what value they see in what you're giving. And I think when firms become braver in asking those questions, I would imagine that those recovery rates will go even higher and retention will probably go higher too, because it then becomes a conversation.
And it also struck me how entrepreneurial Adam has been, and you know, the bravery of setting up his own law firm 8 years ago, and how he said, well, the barriers of entry into setting on up on your own have really lowered recently.
Yeah, and that, you know, his energy levels, you could hear, go up a notch when he started talking about setting up his business, and clearly something he feels very passionately about. And I think he's right. I think the barriers to entry are, you know, increasingly coming down. I think AI is going to be something that's going to be huge there in terms of enabling other alternatives to the traditional model.
Technology generally, I imagine.
Well, yes. And I think working remotely, all of this stuff, you no longer need to have an office, which would have been a massive barrier pre-COVID. And actually post-COVID, more and more companies setting up without that physical place. And actually, you know, firms, we heard Adam there grappling with, do people need to be in the office? Can we manage them as effective a way when they're not?
So great conversation, Claire. Thanks ever so much for that.
Thanks, Ollie.
Look out for the next episode of the Lawyer's Coach podcast, when we'll be speaking to another expert and examining the impact of the billable hour on firm culture.
Lawyer's Coach is brought to you by Client Talk and Hansard Coaching. If you're a lawyer and would like to take part in Lawyers Coach, please visit our website lawyercoach.co.uk for further details. And you can also join the conversation on our LinkedIn group Lawyers Coach. If there are any topics you'd like to hear us discuss, then just get in touch.